Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And it's so great to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, the future. Today we have an old friend, John Casty. You haven't heard from him for about 2 years on this program when we talked to him about his book, Mood Matters. Now he's back with X Events, The Collapse of Everything, like a house of cards we've built our society, and just he likens it to a mouse running through the house of cards, and everything can collapse. And he's going to talk about what we need to be prepared for in just a little bit. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, our fountain of useless information we have here on the set of the second half of the program, and of course at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Reminder that those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. But right now, let's get to the phones and talk to our buddy John Casty. Okay, we're lucky to have back with us today my old friend John Casty. If you are regular listeners to this program, remember John from a couple of years ago when he wrote the book Mood Matters. John is an American complexity scientist and systems theorist and co-founder of the X Center in Vienna, and among numerous other credits. John, so good to have you back with us.
Great being with you again, Colonel. I'm glad to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and you obviously have been very busy since we spoke the last time. I love your new book. I just got it the other day, and I've cracked it and gotten into it and been able to scan it. I haven't been able to thoroughly digest it because I haven't had a whole lot of time, but it is so good, and I really want to let the listeners know that the one thing great about a Casty book is that it's an easy read. I mean, nobody's going to have problems reading this book or understanding thoroughly what you have to say. You make a point, and then you'll be sure and maybe make the point in a little different way. And I really, really, really am enjoying the book very much. X Events, The Collapse of Everything, sounds a little doomsday, but it's not. And the beautiful thing is that you do explore some of the fears that many of us have about our current state of technology, and then you go ahead and address them and kind of align many of those fears. So it is really enjoyable.
Thank you, Colonel. Yeah, that subtitle, The Collapse of Everything, I have to issue a small disclaimer that was really a bit of melodrama on the publisher's part, and I would have been a little happier if they had agreed to put a question mark at the end of it. But, in fact, they didn't. So there it is.
I think a question mark would have been far more appropriate. I agree with you. Because in reading it, I'm not getting a doomsday. I'm getting really some solid answers to concerns that a lot of people have. And before we get into this, though, real quick, last time we spoke, you had come out with Mood Matters. And that was also a fascinating book, and you've even mentioned that it's kind of a primer for this one and a part of a three-book series that you eventually want to do a third book, and Mood Matters being the first. And I have to ask you, in Mood Matters, you were good at predicting stuff, and you even predicted the outcome of the 2008 election. So I got to put you on the spot. Consider that Mitt Romney is the presumptive nominee, and that he's going to choose a running mate that maybe has a little bit more timber and acceptance than Sarah Palin ever had. Who's going to win in November?
Okay, Colonel, here's how you're going to tell who's going to win. You look at what the financial markets are doing shortly before the election, and if those markets are a reflection of the collective mood of the population, the beliefs the population has about its future. And if that mood is positive and people are optimistic about the future, thinking tomorrow will be better than today, then the incumbent, Mr. Obama, will be reelected. Otherwise, he's out the door. And that I've done a study of this. Actually, my friend Bob Frechter in Atlanta actually did the study. He looked at every U.S. presidential election since the beginning of the Republic back in the 1700s and found that there were in 19 cases, if you count 2008, where just prior to the election, the financial markets were in a pronounced upward movement, and every single one of those times, every single time without exception, the incumbent was reelected. And there were six times when the mood was negative, people were fearful of the future rather than welcoming it, and in each one of those six cases, the incumbent was kicked out. And all the other times, there was no pronounced trend one way or another, and so it was kind of a toss of the coin. But my own feeling, for what it's worth, is I think that we are currently in a downtrend, and I think that that trend is going to be worse by November than it is today. And if that forecast is correct, forecasting the election is easy. The Republican candidate will win. Mr. Obama will be kicked out. And there it is. And in fact, it doesn't even matter who the Republican candidate is. What matters is whether the incumbent is retained in office or kicked out. So it happens, and it looks like it will be Mr. Romney. And I think that at the moment, if I were placing bets on the election, I would bet on the Republicans.
All right, John Casty, thanks for that prognostication. Now I want to get into your new book, X Events, The Collapse of Everything. You compare it to a house of cards, and what a great analogy. I mean, we build a little bit more and a little bit more, and all the stuff that we have today, our electrical, our computers, our water supply, everything we have is built on technology that has come before. And your case for the book is that a mouse runs through this house of cards and the whole thing can collapse, and you're referring to that as an X event. Now, was that pretty close to describing the book?
Not bad. A pretty good summary of a 350-page book in a couple sentences, but fundamentally, I'm concerned with the fact that these infrastructures that we depend upon for our modern way of life, and you mentioned many of them, electric power, communications, transportation, food and water supply, and so on and so forth, these are so now intricately interwoven with each other that all it takes is a kind of a failure of one of them to start domino effects of passing through the entire process, and this is dangerous. The problem is increasing technology because it's made these systems ever more complex, and in some cases so complex that the designers of the system don't even understand them. And so this complexity overload has a way of eventually having to be rectified by some type of downsizing.
All right.
Yeah.
I was going to say that you do a what you call a preamble in the book. I hadn't noticed that much. Usually people call it a preface or a foreword or something like that, but you kind of preamble, and that was a very good, very interesting read. And then you get into to part one, why normal isn't so normal anymore, and getting down to cases. And before we get into some of the chapters of the book, I really do want to get into some of these specifics. Kind of tell us about your preamble and this part one a bit. What do you mean, why normal isn't so normal anymore, and getting down to cases?
Well, the underlying question that I'm really trying to address in this book, and since I wrote it for a popular audience, actually this book was an experiment for me. As you mentioned early on, I've written a lot of books for, I'll say, a intelligent but general lay reader, not professional.
Mm-hmm.
But each one of those previous books had there was a certain kind of technical patina, if you like, in the book. And this book, X Events, I decided I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to write a book about a really important topic, namely extreme events and, in essence, the potential collapse of modern life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do it without using a single equation, no formulas, no pictures, no graphs, no charts, just an underlying idea and a lot of stories. And that's why I think that you said earlier that nobody's going to have any trouble understanding this book. And I hope you're right. One of my friends saw an earlier version of the manuscript, and he said, oh, gee, this is just like reading Malcolm Gladwell, except a little more interesting. And I said, I hope you're right. That's the audience that I want to address.
Oh, absolutely. What an easy read. I just enjoy the pages just turn, and the information is really incredible, and I want to get into some of these things if we can, some of the chapters. And you got to forgive me a little bit because I haven't had a chance to thoroughly study the book. I've gone through and picked out different areas that are interesting to me, so I'm going to be a little dumb here like many of the listeners might be on the content of the book. But let's start with the first chapter, Digital Darkness. What are you talking about there?
Well, maybe we could just back up half a step, because I want to address the question you asked a moment ago about this preamble and the opening section of the book, because that's really to set the stage and put forth onto the table the underlying question that runs through the entire book. These chapters, as you call them, that constitute part two that we're going to go into in a moment, they're all just illustrations of the general point that I'm trying to make. Is I want to address the question, when you're faced with situations where you have no data, you're talking about events that perhaps have never happened before, have happened so infrequently,
mm-hmm.
so that you cannot use the normal tools of probability and statistics to calculate a distribution for how likely or unlikely a particular event may be, how do you characterize, how do you measure risk in such situations?
Okay.
When probability and statistics are out, can't use them. And my book, X Events, puts forth an argument that's sort of based on what I said a moment ago, complexity. It's a system becoming too complex, too many degrees of freedom, as a surrogate way of characterizing complexity, and the rest of the book is really an amplification and illustration of that general idea.
All right. Well, that.
No. Well, yeah. Go ahead. Ask me now that question again about was about the internet, right? Digital darkness.
Well, yeah. Okay. I want to be sure that we thoroughly covered your preamble and the setup for the book. But yes, you did make a strong point that it's hard to look at the evidence that we have when with such a short period of time to be able to study the evidence and come up with something that's going to be really solid. But you do a pretty good job of going through the rest of the book and pointing out the dangers. And I think digital darkness is what you started out with. So can we get into that at this point?
Sure. That second, what's called part two of the book, there are 11, sort of, I call them mini chapters,
mm-hmm.
each of which addresses a particular type of extreme event. You might even call them the ultra-extreme events. That's why I use the shorthand X events.
Mm-hmm.
To illustrate how complexity overdose or complexity overload, if you like, can push you over the edge into a systemic collapse. And
sure.
That first chapter, Digital Darkness, is about an X event that is the collapse of the Internet. The collapse of the Internet and uncertainty as to when or if it's ever going to come back, and how that might happen, and if it does happen, what kinds of implications does that have on our daily life today, the way we're living it today in the industrialized world.
Now, the collapse of the Internet is something that a lot of people have been concerned with, and of course there are those who believe the Internet should be scrapped entirely and rebuilt, because the security right now is so bad with the Internet. Do you hold with that?
I think that there are some real problems. I mean, this system was put in place, what we're currently using today, was put in place back in the 1970s. And it was never imagined at that time that it would be called upon to do the kinds of things that we're asking it to do. You know, huge, high bandwidth transmissions of movies and volumes, gigabytes, petabytes of data and so on. It's a technological wonder, and it's pretty extraordinary when you think about it that essentially it's only been around for less than 40 years, and how it has been woven in such an intricate and critical way to almost everything we do. What you and I are doing right now, talking on the phone on a transatlantic phone call, it wouldn't be possible in the way it is now without the internet. Everything depends upon the communication system that is basically all the old communication modes have been given over to the internet.
Yeah, I guess this would be a good time to mention. Yeah, it is intercontinental. I'm in Dallas, Texas, and you're in Vienna, Austria, and we're talking to each other over the bird, you know, over the satellite, and we're getting a great copy, wonderful communications, and that sort of thing. And you're right. If the internet just all of a sudden were to take a poo poo on us, where would we be? And what was your outcome there with that part one that you were talking about?
Well, the outcome is really to give some indications of many of the ways that the internet is not even necessarily threatened by, let's say, hackers or terrorists, but is even just threatened by its legitimate users by just asking much more of it than the system is capable of actually giving. And you said it earlier that many people are talking about the idea of just scrapping the internet entirely and building a whole new one. And in fact, there are some studies that I talk about briefly in that chapter that the National Science Foundation and others are financing just to look at how this might be done and what the new internet could or should look like and so on. Now that we have experience with Internet 1.0, let's talk about Internet 2.0 or 3.0 and try and fix it so that it can really meet our needs for not just the present, but at least the foreseeable future.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun getting into that particular part of digital darkness. That'll be really, really good. Now, the second chapter there, and this is a list of 11 things that we have to watch out for. When do we eat? Now, what you're saying is that the food supply is threatened?
Well, you know, this is a very topical point, especially right now. I just saw yesterday a story, it was in the International Herald Tribune, mm-hmm. of the President of the United States essentially making some statements publicly about the great threat to the food supply in the United States right now because of this huge drought in the Midwest, right where you are. Mm-hmm. And that the corn price of corn is shooting through the ceiling. Pictures of farmers standing out there in their fields with corn stalks half the height that they would normally be at this time of the year, and with no end in sight. And this isn't something confined to the United States either. The same kind of drought is going on right now in Russia, another major grain supplying part of the world. So these things are going to, in the coming years, get more frequent, and there's going to be more and more trouble. I'll give you another illustration. Yesterday I was talking to a friend in New Zealand, and he happens to be someone who owns an olive grove and produces high quality olive oil. And he told me that he could send me some olive oil, but it would have to be from the 2011 harvest because he's not sure they're going to have any olives for 2012 because everything was going fine until some weeks ago when a snowstorm came through the South Island of New Zealand, very unusual, and followed by a deep frost which killed off all the olives in his grove. And so it's not just drops. It's in his case, it was too much cold, not too much heat. But this stuff is going on all over the place, and it's going to show up as increased food prices for people like you and me who live in the, let's say, post-industrialized world. Probably we're not going to starve, but a lot of people are going to be spending a lot more money on their food bill in the coming years than what they've been accustomed to.
Well, there have been droughts and famines, of course, down through the millennia and that sort of thing, and we've always managed to overcome them. But you're listing that as an X event that with worldwide implications that could really have some serious consequences. Are you saying that that's going to be a result of global warming, or are you saying that it could be snowstorms in New Zealand or La Nina, or where could this come from?
Listen, how about all of the above?
Mm.
And that's exactly what I don't want to make some claim about global warming. If I accept the common consensus that there is global warming, regardless of where the cause is, it's certainly going to have an impact, and not a very nice one. You're certainly right, of course, when you say we've had famines and droughts and so on in the past, and humanity has survived them. And I think that humanity will survive what's happening now, too. But it's certainly an X event in the sense that it's something pretty rare. What we're facing now is something that has not been seen since the time of the Depression, nearly 100 years ago now, back in the 1930s. And so, yes, we survived the 1930s, and we'll probably survive the 2030s also. But it doesn't, I'm not talking about sort of existential threats, but X events are events that are rare, surprising, and great social impact in terms of money, lives, and so on. And I think that certainly maybe a doubling of the food prices would certainly qualify in that respect.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty tragic thing. Double the food prices overnight. Now let's moving along here. We do a lot of coverage of Homeland Security issues because we're very involved with the Homeland Security conferences that go on every year. And your digital darkness is one thing that is giving serious study to with the internet, but also that you have number three, the day the electronics died. There's a real concern that all of a sudden the electronics and the communications and everything else just goes to pieces if the electronics dies. Can you expand on that a little bit for chapter three?
Yeah, well, that chapter actually is an account of how the electronics may die for a very specific reason, an electromagnetic pulse. And this is something that, with the exception of certain kinds of solar flares coming from the sun, it's something that's basically human-caused. In fact, my whole story in this book is mostly about human-caused extreme events,
okay.
The kind of stuff that we do to ourselves,
really?
Not the kind of things that nature brings our way, like asteroid impacts or earthquakes or supervolcanoes and so on, but the kinds of stuff that humans create.
Ooh.
And can end up doing us in one way or another. An electromagnetic pulse is the outcome of usually a high air burst nuclear explosion, a nuclear weapon, essentially. And it, as part of that process of setting off a nuclear weapon high in the atmosphere, what comes out is some electric fields that are essentially blank. You can blanket a whole country with one weapon. Set it off over, let's say, Kansas at a height of maybe 20 miles or so. Then you're going to get an electromagnetic pulse that will affect the entire country. An electromagnetic pulse, there is no fuse box. It's everywhere.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Samuel Barclay Beckett. Yes, the Beckett that you've read about when you were in high school. You're a fool to drink when young. And a fool not to drink when old.